Welcome to TechCast, the podcast that quenches curiosity, powered by Q&A Markham. TechCast, where we deep dive into the exciting world of technology, bringing you the latest trends, innovations, and thought-provoking discussions. Join us on this exciting journey as we explore the boundless possibilities of technology.
Hello, everyone. My name is Swapna Subramani, and I'm extremely excited to welcome you to the Women at Work series powered by Q&A Markham. I had announced this on Women's Day, and I cannot wait for this to take off. Today, we have a really, really interesting, fun-loving, and vibrant personality to kick off our Women at Work series. It is the Managing Director of The Hive. You must have heard her before as the voice of the radio, and I'll let her introduce herself, and you would definitely recall her voice and recall her presence as well. So very excited for this today. Welcome for this, Malvika, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you as part of the Women at Work series.
Thank you for having me.
We are really hoping that this series of podcasts is like inspiring, eye-opening. We want to understand the challenges, the opportunities that women have today, and really kind of be setting the stage for the young women to look up and be like, we can do it as well, kind of a series. So really excited to like host this as well, and I look forward to like all the different women I'm going to get to meet, and great to like have you start off our journey.
I'm excited for you and thank you for having me to kick it off.
Thank you. So I just wanted to understand, Malvika, you've kind of transitioned. I recall you as the voice of the radio, and I think at that time, many years ago, 101.6 was the main, City 101.6 was the main channel, and everybody would tune in and recognize that voice. And then you made like a big departure from that to The Hive, and my son goes to The Hive as well, so
That's the best news I can hear.
So just tell us a little bit about your journey, how you started, and how you have ended where you are, and was it like a deliberate attempt to be there, or it kind of you just stumbled upon it, just give us a little bit.
Okay, so I stumbled into radio and I stumbled out of radio.
Okay.
I stumbled into radio because in 2006 I was still in college, and I was set my mind to becoming an economist. I'm a big fan of economics. I love maths and statistics. I'm an absolute nerd. Mm. I got a rank in my final year degree in economics. So I was one of those kids who spent my spare time making graphs. And then I applied to an MBA school and I didn't get in.
Okay.
And I'd only applied to one. It was an MBA school in Hyderabad, and I didn't get in. And I said,
ISB.
ISB, yeah. Okay. And I was like, I'm going to dump economics before economics dumps me. And that was my attitude. But no, simultaneously, radio was happening. And I'd always been doing theater as a kid.
Okay.
So theater sort of lent itself to radio. Okay. When radio licensing came out and they were looking for presenters, where else would you look? You'd look at people who can do improv and who can hold a stage and who can make a conversation and make their voices useful on the airwaves. Okay. And so they looked at radio. And that's how I got into radio. And then radio was my main sort of bread and butter for 12 years. So I came to Dubai in 2008. Mm. And my last show was on the 31st of March 2020. So that's
quite a long time.
12 years.
Yeah.
Of which I spent about 10 and a half of those years on The Breakfast Show on City 1016. Mm. And it was a big, big network. It still continues to be a massive network.
Yeah.
And it's got a massive reach. And they speak to literally millions of people every single day.
Mm.
And so that was, of course, happening. But I think parallelly, while I was engaging with theater and I was engaging with teaching the kids at The Hive, and I would do that like once a week, twice a week, whenever I had the time, I would go in and sort of teach class.
Yeah.
But there was a part of me that felt like, I think I'm done. Mm. It's not that it's not exciting. Honestly, radio is one of the best jobs you can have, just because it's good money, you're famous, you always get positive feedback.
Yeah.
The stress is very different of being a performer. But having said that, I just felt like there was only so many times I could be honestly excited about Salman Khan movies.
Yeah.
So I just had to like find something that was more exciting. Mm. I remember distinctly being on stage at one of those massive Global Village gigs, you know, where there are like 100,000 people or something in the audience, and thinking to myself, damn, I missed class today. I wonder what my senior kids are up to. Did they learn their lines? And I knew that when I was sort of cheating on the job in that way, when I was like mentally in another place while I was doing the
so
biggest
gig. So you know
gig,
that there is a there is a gap,
I knew I was in love with something else now. And I just, you know, I was able to sort of buy over the business in 2019 and then make the transition in 2020.
Nice.
So I took a little bit of time to sort of steady the boat, make sure that it was in a good place financially, that I was able to, you know, move all of my efforts without compromising anything and anyone who was dependent on me.
Fair
and
enough.
Then I think that was a very crucial year for me, 2019. And in 2020, I made the switch.
Nice.
And I asked Radio whether I could step out. And they graciously said, okay, I guess
I guess you found
yeah, you found love. So go on. And then it's been Hive ever since. And we've grown. When I took over the company, we were at 160, 170 kids. But today we're at 1,000 students just at the Hive. And that's not including all of the schools that we work at and all of the other sort of
additional workshops
do.
And everything. Right. Amazing.
So it's it's awesome.
Yeah.
And Om is one of our kids. So.
Yes. Proudly so. So, I mean, it's a very, like, interesting journey, right? Like, where, like you said, you stumbled into radio, you stumbled out of radio, and then now you're taking on, you know, doing a very, I would say, a more serious role, because as a managing director, you're building an organization up and so on. Is there, like, a particular, like, mental switch you had to make? Because now you're taking over a business. And were there any specific skills that you, like, consciously worked on saying that, okay, now I'm moving from, like, a entertainment to, you know, managing a business? I mean, what irrespective of what the business is doing, you're still managing a business, right?
Yeah.
You have your capital expenses, you have, or you have operations, you need to do people management. So were there any particular skills that you felt that you had to learn to kind of take this on?
Everything. I think the things that Radio did teach me is, number one, I think I'm a good marketing person. Like, I think I can tell a good story. I think I understand the core of what an audience is looking for, and I'm able to have that audience awareness, which means that when I meet a new person, I gauge very quickly what their need is, and I'm able to weave the story that they need to hear. And that doesn't mean I'm lying in any way, but it's a very particular,
like, a storyteller.
It's a very particular sort of storytelling nerve that I've built and trained over the years. That's number one. Number two is, I think I'm a creative person, and that is something that Radio encouraged. And I think fundamentally, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be a creative person, because you've constantly got to create avenues
and innovate
because wherever you are at, you've got to create a pathway for the next year. You've got to create a pathway for the next 10 years. So in effect, entrepreneurship is really a creative exercise. It's about understanding how you can creatively move pieces of the puzzle around and make a way forward. The things that I did not realize was so difficult is, number one, just the daily drills of the business. Like, I still hate looking at Excel sheets. I don't want to sit down with my numbers. I don't want to sit and calculate our profits and our revenue and our this and that. I mean, I had to understand things like as simple as VAT. You won't believe it, Sapna, I'd never used an Excel sheet until 2020.
Right.
Because I'm a radio presenter. We don't do Excel. We talk. You make the Excel. You sell the work. You know, we'll just show up and talk, right? So I didn't know how to add two columns on Excel. Like, I had to YouTube this and learn it for myself. I certainly did not know how a business is valued and what is a good amount of... I know how what a good amount of money is to pay for an outfit for a red carpet.
Yeah.
I don't know how you buy a business. I had to YouTube that, and I had to sort of figure that out. So I think these things were difficult. People management, yes, was difficult. But I think, again, the emotional intelligence that one... learns in drama is actually where you play it out. You know, the people management, understanding that someone is, you know, what someone needs, where they're coming from, what's their story, what is the motivation behind the line that they're saying to you right now, is very much of a drama exercise. So people management was not as hard as I think just the drill of the work.
And, like, as now a woman MD, right? Like, are there, like, any specific biases that you feel, or any kind of, like, glass ceiling that you feel that you had to break in the past 5 years, you know, as since you took over as managing director of the Hive? So just wanted to get into the, you know, little bit of the uncomfortable space.
No,
of
please.
Facing I'm that, you know, that
happy to.
Little bit of a bias. I think everybody does, but I want to know, like, what were yours?
It's across the board. So I'll tell you about the biases right from the beginning. And I think as the managing director, I'm only getting the wisdom now because I'm on the other side of the negotiating table. Mm. So I'm able to see the stupid mistakes that I made when I was younger.
Okay.
But I think the bias started way, way, way back. Mm. I think just in terms of the way that I negotiated my first salary, the way that I talked about my raises, when I was meeting my COO at the time or my line manager at the time, I simply didn't have the vocabulary to say that, hey, this is the value that I'm bringing to the table, so why shouldn't I be paid an equivalent amount, right? So I think these things are very much now in retrospect, I'm thinking back going, oh my God, I wish someone had talked to me about this.
Yeah.
I wish I had coaching about this because it is not the company's job to coach you about it in many ways because I feel like honestly they are trying to save every dirham they can to,
of course,
to, you know, increase those profits.
Yeah.
But now in retrospect, I'm like,
yeah.
And it's not just that. It's also like, I cannot count the number of events that I've done where I've been asked, so what exactly will you be wearing to the event? I'm pretty sure no man in my place was asked that question.
Right.
If I was doing a television show, I would arrive to the set 3 hours before my male colleagues because that's how long hair and makeup took. I had to be pinched and prodded and poked and painted in every shape and form to be on television.
Yeah.
But I was being paid the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Just the expectations that were, that, you know, one had of a female presenter is very different from that of a male presenter. And all that is just, all that is just until the time that I took on the Hive. But as an MD, even today, I say this so often, right? Sometimes my partner and I will go into a meeting and I'll say, how much do you think we should quote? And I'll say 50, he'll be like 500. You know, just the audacity, just that confidence that like, I'm going to price what I'm worth. I still struggle with that.
Yeah.
I feel like women often price at
undersell themselves.
Not just undersell. It's like, I want to price this at a point that you won't say no. Because the rejection of you saying that you don't want my product is so heartbreaking that I'll do anything to make sure that I don't put myself in that emotional position. I think that's just so fundamental, right?
Yeah, fundamental.
And this is all with me not even talking about things like maternity leave or the gender pay gap or the fact that, you know, just the UAE is currently terribly ill-equipped for women in the workplace.
Correct.
And us saying anything otherwise is just, it's untrue.
Yeah.
It's untrue. Sure, we have women on the boards of directors and sure, we have women in powerful positions.
But far and few, yeah.
Few and far between, A. B, in very particular roles and sectors, look at any of your big companies and you'll see you'll mostly have women in HR, in marketing, in PR. But how many women do you know who are heading the finance divisions of their companies, right?
Yeah.
Are we equipping those women, in fact, to be even negotiating for themselves? Because not both are true. You can be the head of accounts and still not know how to negotiate for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's a different story altogether.
Yeah.
It's quite simply, like I was talking about this on our podcast, More Bang for Her Buck, which is that you'll see a big organization will have a parking spot for the CEO. But the pregnant woman is parking 3 kilometers away in the kacha parking and walking with her 5 bags of food and clothes and laptop and this and that all the way from there to the workplace. That's the only kind of flexibility we're talking about. It's being able to open your eyes and see that, like, hey, this is what is going on.
Yeah.
Another really big one is for pregnant women, you're expected to go back to the workplace in 45 days. Now, if your company is really nice, they're going to allow you flexibility until 3 months.
Okay? Yeah.
If they're like amazing. And also because if your work allows it, in many cases, your work just doesn't, right?
Yeah.
If I'm a teacher, for example, I've got to be in class to take class. What are my options?
But
just something as simple as a room to breastfeed. It's crazy. Would you, if I asked you today, like, hey, this is my cup of coffee. Well, I'm going to take it into the toilet. You would be kind of disgusted, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I would not take it into the toilet cubicle. But that's where women are pumping.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
And this is in the biggest of companies. There is no room for a woman to feed.
Yeah.
And you're asking her to come back in 45 days. What is your plan? Like, did you think this through? How exactly
there
is she supposed
plan.
To be sitting there?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think no one really wants to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think all very valid points. But one thing that was, you know, coming to mind when you were saying this is like, like nobody talked to you about it, or nobody coached you or how to negotiate for yourself, or you know, to say that, or even negotiate a, you know, a respectable time after giving birth, right?
Yeah.
So who should be teaching, you know, these things to women? You know, what is the institution? Like, it's not learned at university or school. We all graduate from the same universities, apply to the same jobs on LinkedIn, and go for all these interviews. So, like, it's like a question that comes to mind that, you know, who should be equipping women? Who should be teaching women to say that when you go for an interview, you ask, you do your research? Because I know a lot of women who do their research and they're like, okay, this job pays, I don't know, 25,000 dirhams, right? And they'll ask for 20 because they know that the job pays 25, but they want, you know, ask for 20 just because they want to be accepted.
Yeah.
Versus a man would be like, oh, this job pays 25, I'll ask for 30 because, you know, I'll get it anyways. Or I'll negotiate, you know. So there's, like you said, that audacity, that confidence. So who should be the ones teaching women, young women, this kind of confidence? Like, you know, should it be the hype? The hype should be teaching.
No, I think it starts there.
Yeah.
Right? I think it starts there. I think it starts in nipping it in the butt in the classroom when you're watching the kids. I think it starts there. It's equipping them. A lot of times I've thought to myself, why didn't I ask? I mean, I'm a very empowered woman from a very matriarchal home. I had the best education. I had access to the Oprah Winfrey shows, if that's the measure of anything, right? Yeah. So why didn't I ask? It's because I feel I didn't have anyone in my immediate circle who was coaching me with the vocabulary. And I think sometimes just having these conversations around young girls kind of teaches them that it's okay to ask. Or it's okay to...
Or you must ask. Not just that it's okay. You must.
You must, right? And also opening their eyes to the fact that this is a gender-based conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is not, come on, everybody's equal. Like, what are you guys fussing about? It's not equal. It's not. Let's not scam anyone. Yeah. It's not equal.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's one.
Far from,
And I think the boys need to be taught that as well. I think we need to be nipping that in the butt as well. The third is, I think, at college and university level, rather than us just, you know, giving you subject matter expertise, which is fantastic, we also need to give you the skills to actually use this in workplaces, like actually start practicing this.
Of course.
But most importantly, I think it's mentorship.
Correct.
Right? I think women like you and me and the women who are above us in all measures of success, we owe it. We owe it to our young girls to take the time out to spend time with them. I mean, the 15-year-old, the 20-year-old, the 25-year-old, the 30-year-old. If I'm sitting at 35 and looking back, I owe it to every one of those women to give them the tools to be able to do this better.
Correct.
Than I did.
Correct. And you know? I mean, like, learn from what, you know, you did right. And, you know, also understand that the nature of the challenges would have changed, like for you versus like a 25-year-old versus a 15-year-old, but there still is, you know.
Of course. So
I think it's not about like, okay, I faced this particular situation and this is how you combat it, but it's more like I learned something from this situation, and you might not face the same situation, but in a similar situation, this is how you can apply. So I think it's more about
like application.
I see a lot of like young women who I speak to, you know, when I go to school and, you know, I do like a couple of these just, you know, talk fireside chat sessions. And they're like, oh, no, we will not face that. You know, they're like, that is us zamane ka problem. And it's not really like, you know, valid now. But I'm just like, well, what we learned is something that you can reapply, even if the picture paints itself a little bit differently. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. On more bang for her buck, in fact, I had my mom on the show and she was talking about how she didn't have a women's toilet in her bank for so many years. Oh, and when she was pregnant, she had to kind of hold on for 5 hours and then come back home, or 6 hours or whatever. And the point is that, in her generation, it was about a women's toilet. In my generation, it's about a breastfeeding room.
And then later on, it'll be something else.
But the argument remains the same. The argument is, hey, one sec. Can we just back it up and think about this with a little more sensitivity?
Correct.
What can we afford to do? I'm not saying that, you know, now build and like
entire
you know, palace
Barbie
for
land.
It. No, we don't need that. Yeah. No, we don't need that. We just need pretty basic flexibility.
Correct.
Honestly.
Correct.
It's not that hard. And you would have done it for yourself if you were the one who was in that position. So
correct. Correct.
Just be nice. Yeah. Like, you know.
Well, okay. So I have a, you know, a little bit of a fun segment just to kind of snap out of the, you know, oh, this is what's happening to us and kind of the movement that we're starting here. So it's just a few questions on how, you know, what your preference is, like a little bit of a, not a multiple choice, either or kind of thing. Okay. So to Malvika, so in terms of productivity, are you an early bird or a night owl?
Oh, definitely an early bird. Okay. By 9:30, I'm lights out.
Yeah, I'm night owl, so opposite of that. So I'm just going to tell my thing also, just so that we'll make it a dual this thing. Okay, your desk decor, minimalist or personal jungle?
It's a book jungle. I just have books growing out of everywhere. So on my left, I've got a massive shelf. And okay. Then on my table, there are these piles of books. So I'm in my little book jungle.
Nice, yeah. Nice. So book jungle. I like that. Okay. And what's your power outfit choice? Is it a classic suit or like statement pieces?
It's what I feel most comfortable in that day.
Okay.
I don't mind a power suit though. But when I really, really want to impress, then I wear a sari.
Nice. Nice. I like it. Yeah, I think for me it's like suit. It's like I keep it safe a little bit. Okay. And in terms of your meeting preference, and this has been very valid since 2020, do you prefer like face-to-face meeting or like virtual meetings?
I think it depends. If I'm just about to suss the product out, like if you're pitching to me for the very first time, online is great. Yeah. I can just solve the problem, decide whether it needs the investment of my time or not on a Zoom call.
Yeah.
But if it's something that's about person driven, if it's a person driven thing, where I need to talk to somebody about their growth or their how they're feeling, then it has to be one to one.
Okay.
Preferably with a hand in hand. I'm like one of those people. Like, nice. Let's hold hands and talk.
Yeah. Nice. And your learning method, is it like on the job or you prefer like formal education for learning different things?
No, I absolutely am on the job. And I like to invest a bit of my day every day in learning something new. So
And I think that is very key to innovation as well, right? Because everything is like, once you do a formal education for 3 or 4 years, it's done. But there's so many more things to like learn. And I think that's why like we have to always keep innovating, keep learning, and constantly kind of reinventing ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
Great. So on that, I think I just had a few questions. I want to like increase those questions as we like, you know, go along and get more and more of this this or that. But thanks for fancying my questionnaire there. No,
thank you.
But what I do want to ask you is to like, you know, what is your one key message to all the young women out there aspiring to be either in your field or in any other field? And I know you do a lot of these mentoring and coaching acts yourself, but what would be the one key message that you want to like give out to our audience and listeners today?
So I think my one key message would be to like financial aspects of your work and your home and your home are extremely crucial. We may think of it as it's not about the money, I don't want to discuss the money. It's never about the money. But very often your freedom of choice, your ability to walk out of an unsafe place, whether that be an unsafe marriage or an unsafe relationship or an unsafe boss or an unsafe workplace, is all tied in to your financial independence and your ability to pay for getting out, right? You have to be able to buy your way out of things sometimes. Correct. So make sure that you make well-planned and well-aware sort of financial choices. I think that would be number one. And number two is kind of keep your ear to the ground and always listen, because listening, I find so often that you have kids going to like these fantastic schools and great universities, but they're not really listening.
Yeah.
So they're paying 200,000 dirhams worth of fees, but they're only listening to 10% of that. So you only got 20,000 dirhams of that value, right? Yeah. So I think use, like be hungry for knowledge, like just soak it up wherever you go and listen more than you speak. I think that's a big one.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's coming from someone who speaks a lot. So.
Well, you speak a lot because I'm sure you also listen and kind of, give it back. So great. Thank you so much, Malvika. It was an absolute pleasure having you here at our studios today.
Thank you.
I think, this is a great start to what we are trying to achieve here. And this is just one of it, right? Like, I know you have your bang for her buck as well. And I see a lot of more podcasts, and I think more the better, because every kind of bit of information or dialogue or discussion is going to hit some ears and make some difference.
Absolutely.
And that's the goal. goals. So we have to start.
If we can change one mind, it's worth it. If we can change one mind.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time here today. Thank you everyone for tuning in. And I hope that was great. I enjoyed it. And there's more coming up. So please stay tuned to Women at Work series. Thank you.
TechGasp, powered by QNMR.com, demystifying technology, one episode at a time.